Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hello, I'm Aaron Norris, Vice President of the Norris Group, and we're here for a second show with Bruce Norris, President and Founder of the Norris Group. Just a quick recap, he's been an investor since 1980 with over 2,000 transactions under his belt as investor, builder, and or hard money partner. Known for his long-term market timing trends like the California comeback in 97 and California crash in 2006. And welcome back.
Thanks, Aaron.
Second show where we're changing seats a little bit. So last session, we really talked about the California comeback too and what we're working on. We're probably still a couple weeks away from it even going to print. You're not still doing research, are you?
Of course.
Oh, geez.
No, I really am because it really is. The stock market was down 200 points today on the backs of poor employment and the Fed's decision. So, you know, during the week, there was some happiness about, you know, the Fed, unhappiness about the Fed maybe stepping in and doing some less buying of the mortgages and stuff. But then you don't have any new employment. And see, that's the conundrum for them is that they're going to make a national decision not to have a double dip recession by continuing the low interest chain trends. And California is going to be going, wow, this is fantastic.
Who are some of the naysayers saying that they're still expecting a poor comeback for real estate?
Oh, my. I mean, I'd say a lot of people from academia. I mean, Shiller from Case Shiller Index. He just last month said that he expects a flat market for 10 years.
10 years?
10 years. Yeah. And again, it's not uncommon.
Where does he live?
I want to interview him in the worst way.
He's in Yale, right? He teaches at Yale.
Yeah, so. And he owns a house. And I think he owns two houses, but he doesn't own them with any expectation of them going up. And, I never feel arrogant about the conclusions, you know? I mean, that's the thing. I feel like there's a lot of much more intelligent people than I that have disagreed with me and have been incorrect. And you don't, you know, it's not like you celebrate that. You really go, okay, why? What am I seeing that they're not? Why? And I think the only thing it comes down to, and I think that's one of the things that's important when you start talking about that we've been involved in so many transactions. I look at a chart and it's alive to me.
Right.
I remember 95 and I remember 89 and I remember what I did and I remember paying for what I did. And so that's part of that moodometer. I can look at that and feel the mood of getting that wrong. And a stat that's just a stat is I remember Michael Carney, Dr. Carney, when we first talked and talked about prices, you know, doubling. He says, Bruce is going to look at this foreclosure chart and he sees something in it. He said, I don't see it. And it's okay, you know, but it's just he's collecting the data, but he's not in the industry. And so I think that's if we have refinement and we have better conclusions, it's probably because now we also have a history of what we've said coming out true. So it means that's the part what if it isn't true? Then I think if you're a researcher, you go back and go, okay, let's don't pretend it was right when it wasn't. Let's see if our thought process was incorrect and change it. I mean, honestly, that's what you have to be honest and do. So if you didn't end in price, let's say we thought price would end before they did. Okay. So when they didn't, you know, there was some heat that we took about that. There was a whole year of, you know, 500 to 600 we didn't think would happen. But then we didn't even know what a collateralized debt obligation was. We had no idea that people were financing stuff and not even, you know.
Turns out they didn't know what it was either.
But, you know, so then you can go back and at least say, okay, that's why that occurred. Okay, so there's some things where you can point to and say, I'm not going to change my thesis because this was nonsense. And it's, you know, that's one of the things that we've had to do in the conclusion chapter is I'm forced to not go to the peak price that we reached to extrapolate the future. I have to go back where it should have ended.
Ah, didn't even think about that.
Yeah. So we can't go to the peak price because that was nonsense. So all the ratios that came out of there, you know, can we go down to 11% affordability? Well, yeah, you can if they play with it. Okay. But they're probably not going to play with it. So let's go back to a historical number and play with where our price goes from there. So literally, the ending chapter will have that. We've done it before just in California. Now we're breaking it down per area where the stopping payment will be. And see, this is, we've never done this. We've come up with that affordability number. But this time, I think it's going to end on a payment ratio. And so that's why it's important. So you say, okay, in Riverside County, it's going to be this payment. If it was this price in 89, it produced this payment at the end and so forth. So we'll extrapolate it all in payments this time to where you can feel pretty comfortable making a decision. And I haven't even looked at this. It may be that the payment ends earlier in coastal areas.
Right.
And we did see progression of money going from the coast to Riverside to Victorville. And maybe that's what we do as investors. I don't know yet. But maybe we get the gains out of high dollar areas or, you know, nicer areas, better locations, and keep moving it. Maybe that's what happens. Rosamond didn't even pencil until 2004.
Right.
So, you know, that makes sense to me. I haven't seen that statistically, but I think that's where this might go is say, okay, you know, when you're maxed out here, your historical payment looks like it's over. It may not be over somewhere else. Lancaster Palmdale still has a price per month that's around 1990s price per month.
Isn't, wow. We haven't gotten the debate invitations yet, but if it was, it'd be a lot more fun than the debates we had in 05 and 06. I remember being in the audience and being so upset about how you were treated on stage. I mean, just flat out snarky. And in 05 and 06. And
well, for us, the fun part about that is there was somebody in that audience that's now an investor of ours. And I remember when he came in, he said something to the effect of being worth $75 million or something when he heard me, and now he's worth $25. What do I want to do with it? And really, that really felt good because, that audience of builders was not in the mood to hear that. And see, that word is really important because when you make decisions based on how you feel, you're always going to be late.
Mm.
Okay. And so, and when you're booming in 05 and 06, and if you're a builder, the problem with being a builder, of course, is you really have lead time for your product. So if you think 05 and 06 are happy, you have to think that 09 is going to be the same. Because that's where you're going to continue all your, whatever you're buying today is not going to produce a house till then.
Right.
That's the flaw. And that's the same flaw they have now. Why aren't they creating subdivisions? Because they don't think, it doesn't look like they feel happy right now. So they're not going to start something that's going to come out of the ground until 2016.
Yeah.
See, I would not take that risk. And that, you know what? Maybe they're smarter than I think. Maybe they aren't going to take the risk. I don't know how I can't imagine them not creating building lots. But when I saw the first quarter of 2013, I really thought it would be different. Mm. I thought it would be a year's worth of 2012. I thought the numbers would be 25, not four.
Mm.
I thought, okay, we're going to get on pace of 100 at least this year, not 350, and we're on pace for 20. So I just thought, wow, I mean, they're really skeptical. That's the only way you could describe that. Because they've not signed up, and we know they don't have a backlog of new homes.
Right.
And we know they don't have a backlog of a huge amount of available lots. They don't.
The way that they sell homes was different than they did during the boom, too. They basically take your order first and a down payment before they even start building. So it's almost you order first and then they build. They're not building a whole bunch of models hoping to sell.
We have someone in our family just went shopping for a home. And someone in sales said, 4 months ago. Still no excitement. And now it's crazy. They're raising house prices now every four houses. This
wow.
one company. Every four sales are raising price.
Get it.
So, you know, somewhere down the road, and one of the people that was that attended the Saturday seminar was a salesperson. Actually, he was a material. He was a material buyer for the company. Pretty good sized builder. He says, what's happening is now their land cost is escalating.
Yeah.
Okay. So when they start figuring out their lot cost, they're now going back to their suppliers and trying to buy everything cheaper to make up the difference.
Hmm.
So that'll be an interesting problem because usually when building gets busier, the price of all that stuff goes up instead of down.
I've seen articles too that they're having a hard time finding labor.
Yeah.
Nobody's had to build anything for a while.
Well, migrates out.
Right.
Yeah. And or it doesn't come. See, that's all this stuff, this is what's interesting about the California comeback, is you're going to end up with migration from here. One of the chapters revisits all of the stuff we ever did for with U-Haul. So we compare it with, I forget what the years were, but when it was a downturn, when it was at the end of a boom. And so you price out the, you know, the U-Haul going both ways to kind of see where we're at. Well, when California does have construction boom, we get migration from foreign people and also from other states.
I remember one of the chapters I really liked in All in Our Fold was the chapter about when people migrate, and if they don't come back soon enough, they might plan enough routes to where they never come back.
Yeah.
And you know, what if this boom isn't long enough to cement people in California to where they have a good experience where they want to plant roots and they're gone again?
Well, you know, that's the thing. This report's covering 24 months that I feel very positive about. I don't know how it would end negatively inside of the 24 months, but I want to set the guidelines for the numbers that tell you, okay, this is where it ends. Yeah, I mean, I really hope it doesn't come to that. I'm tired of real estate. You know, it's such a joy. Like when we get in front of clubs now and I have just positive projections.
Oh, I get the comments like, your dad seems so happy.
Yeah.
I'm like, because he likes what he's talking about now.
Yeah, when you're talking about 2 days of the California crash or just something, it's hard to keep talking about it.
Well, I had a whole other thing I was hoping to cover this next whole half hour. Now we only have 13 minutes, so
I'll answer quicker.
Okay. No, it's fine. The hard money loan program, that 8-year program that we came out with in, what was that, 2009? I think people thought we were sort of crazy, and some of these research reports you do plays into that. And why did you pick 8 years?
I thought it would be more than enough for us to have an exit. So I didn't expect someone to have to refi. I just wanted to give them plenty of time to sell at the peak.
There's not been, I haven't seen any of the hard money lenders that have been able to recreate that 8-year term.
But that's Craig Hill and the trust. Our performance of the borrowers, our borrowers pay on time.
Yeah.
You know, when we went back to present in Fannie Mae and I had that little green ball of all currents.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. So they were blown away. My portfolio is at 9.9% and everyone's current. How's yours doing?
Exactly.
We were loaning to investors, not speculators. And so, you know, that's a big difference.
And the people who bought in 2009 and 2010 who locked in those earliest bottom prices, oh my goodness, they are going to be so happy.
Well, not just that. Think about the trusted investor who's got a 9% yield going for 8 years, but now they started at 60% of value, and now they're probably at 40.
Right. So it's gotten even more boring.
Right. Your chance of taking a loss on that is ridiculously non-existent.
Well, now we're starting to do building programs. Yep. So that's just starting ramping up, and we've gotten a lot of interest, especially in the last 3 months, it seems like.
Yeah. And these are people that have bought lots, you know, below probably what they cost to put in.
Right.
And you also have the lending world not in the mood to do that loan.
No.
So, you know, that's the private money world can react and more appropriately and quickly to what the market is telling us. And I guess that's a side benefit of figuring out this stuff in the future, is that we can look at the loan business and say we need to adjust to a different product type. And the 8-year one, the reason we don't have competitors is you don't normally get to ask private party money people to take on an 8-year loan. They just won't.
Right.
That's completely the trust that's been in place. Now, I'm a trusted investor, and I have a ton of those 8-year loans personally, because I don't have to think about it I don't have to get paid off every 6 months. So a portion of my money, I just think, okay, well, it is the most boring part of my portfolio of stuff that I have that creates cash flow. I never get, no one calls me. There's no fix it. I got a $500 bill a couple days ago on a rental, but I never get one on a trust deed.
Tenants and toilets, you don't have to really deal with. And I think that's what's been interesting to watch. You know, even though I grew up with you in real estate, I really didn't pay attention until I started working for the Norris Group. And it's been very interesting to see sort of the progression. Our customer life cycle is, sometimes you've been helping people start, you know, way back in the late 1990s, learn to buy. And as they progress, they move into the trust deeds. And it's just been really interesting to watch that the last couple of years. Where the deals are coming from. I talked to Craig and he said about 40% private sellers, 40% short sales. And then the remaining is really a mix of probate, REO, and new build.
Right.
It'll be really interesting to see how that progresses just in the next 12 months.
Yeah. Well, one of the chapters that we're going to have in this new report is really, I really thank Sean O'Toole for access to the data, because we'll look at the equity position and how it's changed a year ago.
Mm.
And so short sales will continue as long as there's people upside down.
Right.
But when you have price aggression like we're going to have, it ain't going to be long. So some of the rules that we have, tax law changes, you know, not taxing debt forgiveness, that's a national policy that probably won't be necessary in California after 2013.
That would be interesting to see.
Yeah. So even if they pulled the plug in California, it might, it's no big deal.
One of the main questions Diana and I take a lot, if you had to start completely over with no money, where would you start in this market?
I would start with subject to. I would go to Craigslist. I would run an ad. How much does it cost? Nothing.
Nothing.
I would just talk to people that wanted to walk away, and I would take over their position. I would get an option to buy some dirt, and that too doesn't take any money.
Right.
I would get somebody that I could flip to, and I would aggressively pursue responses from signs and mailers.
Yeah.
And literally, that's how I started. I didn't have any money to buy properties. I found.
Right.
Okay. And I think that's one of the important messages, and I don't think people always get it. You know, when you teach a seminar, and it's why I use the example of having the simplest kata. You know, sometimes we spend a whole class doing the simplest kata that you've learned 4 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and you think, oh, why are we doing that? And then you see your sensei do it, and you go, well, that just looks a lot different than mine.
Yeah.
And I think that's the whole idea, is that you're going to have expertise after a certain amount of years, but I bought a lot of properties with no expertise, and just I want it bad enough to really embarrass myself a lot of times a week. And so there's two sides to that. You can't wait till you're an expert, mm-hmm. but you can bust your fanny and get a lot of results. You really can. And so that first 3 months of my buying career, getting 3 years of money accumulated so fast, you know, it really teaches you, you don't have to know very much. You have to bring what you have and then just be willing to try really hard. And this is one of those markets you get rewarded for getting control of something.
Right.
So, you know, just...
And a little more forgiving.
Yeah, that's the nicest
down
part.
Market.
Yeah, that's the thing. You really get bailed out of mistakes on appraisal and the mistakes on repairs. It's just, this is 04, 05 revisited. This is very strong upside.
It always surprises me when last week we taught the how to make $1 million in 24 months. And I think you're right. Some people just don't appreciate the, I really like when you start talking about just bringing what you currently know and have into the business. And your background was in sales, and especially in this market, I like watching Mike Cantu and Tony Alvarez and Bill Tan and you all have such different personalities and different areas of focus and expertise, and you make this business work. And I think that's one of the great things about the business, is you can really come from anywhere and make it happen. It's just maybe a little bit of hustle.
Yeah, that's the thing. We all can get out hustled by somebody that wants it bad enough. I mean, I've had those conversations where you'd have like an agent that you've dealt with before, and you haven't heard from him in a while, and you call him and say, you know, I haven't gotten anything for a while. Oh, yeah. He says, I got a call from this other guy. And it's just sort of like some hustler stepped in, and you go,
Yeah.
You thought it was on automatic pilot, but it wasn't.
Oops. Well, I Survived Real Estate. We haven't started talking about that much. I did hear back from Fannie Mae, and Doug Duncan cannot, as of now, but he's on the radar, and he's like, if for some reason he's going to be out of the country, if it changes, he wants to be part of the panel. I was a little bummed.
Nice. Well, we do have one great panel, though.
And so for people who don't know about the event that we do, it's October 18th this year in I Survive Real Estate. We sort of bring in thought leaders from all over the real estate industry to talk about regulation, legislation, solution, and trends. And it's been really fun over the years, and it's such a different conversation because you're getting it from such different sectors. And this year so far, we've got a few returned some panelists coming back for the first time in a couple of years. Deborah Still, she was there in 2011. She's currently the chair of the Mortgage Bankers Association. And from our experience, having people come out of testifying in front of Congress and really being in it that year, it's almost fun to have them coming out because they're a lot more candid. So looking forward to her coming back. Leslie Appleton-Young, the chief economist of the California Association of Realtors. Very excited to have her for the first time. We've mm-hmm. been bugging her for years.
Yeah.
So Christopher Thornburg, always a favorite. He's coming back. He hasn't been around in the last couple of years. Sean O'Toole with now Property Radar.
That's right.
Very cool tool that people should definitely be checking out. John Burns Real Estate Consulting. This will be the first time. And now he has experience with both builders and the hedge funds. He does consulting, right?
Right. And I really know he's been very positive about the market. And it'd be very interesting what his take is on how far behind builders are, because he has to think they're behind.
Right.
He just can't look at those subdivisions, go, yeah, that's all we're going to need. There's no way. So I bet he's having trouble with people listening to him saying, this is going to get really good, man. You better get some lots.
Are you sure? What are some of the things that you think you're going to probably end up talking about in October?
Well, you know, because it's toward the end of the year, you still have Dodd-Frank that needs to get finalized. So I think Deborah Stills will be very interesting. And Sean with his count of foreclosures, and he can really see if there's any trends, if there's, it really, shadow inventory is really, you know, that's done.
Right.
Okay. Christopher Thornburg will be there, and he's really, like, he's very knowledgeable on the economy, but really sort of disagrees with some of the policies that we have in place, including Prop 13. So we just might bat that one around a little bit.
That will be fun. Now we got to see if we're going to add anybody else to the lineup, but this year we're going to be doing Make-A-Wish and St. Jude again.
Okay.
And last year we raised $70,000, so we'll be see if we can maybe up that a little bit this year. But it's one of my favorite events of the year, about 450 people live, and we broadcast it live. So iSurvivedRealEstate.com, we're currently working on that right now. Our plate is full this summer.
Yeah, it has been. We didn't start the year thinking we were going to write California Comeback 2, for one.
Yeah.
It just became obvious to me when I looked at it and went, yeah, we better write this.
I know. Next year we might have to change the title of I Survived Real Estate.
Yeah. Yeah, it won't be I Survived. I Enjoyed Real Estate.
iThrivedRealEstate.com. It just doesn't have the same drama to it. I don't know, but it's been such a treat to do over the years. And
California Real Estate. Yahoo!
A new title. One last thing. Sometimes I get asked about family. You've never pushed any of us kids into real estate, and you've really been, I don't know, very hands-off. And if it's something that we were passionate about, you would pursue, but you never pushed. Why have you taken that stance, you think?
Well, oddly enough, I mean, both you and Greg have brought expertise to the company that I didn't have. And so that was, it was kind of weird. You know, in your own circumstance, how it happened. It was just an opportunity that was going to open up for you. And then it didn't seem like it was very enjoyable all of a sudden.
No.
And so I thought, huh, well, you know, but I had no idea that you knew what you knew. I mean, maybe you've learned on the job too, but you know, all of a sudden our documents went from ho-hum to, oh my goodness. And so that was a lot of fun. And Greg is like you in the sense where you both just work hard all the time and you learn stuff on your own. And so the company is just, I've enjoyed it, but why I didn't push it? I just didn't see any reason to. I just wanted you to do your own thing.
I know. You've been great about that. Moving from being an artist in New York to in real estate, they're like, what did you used to do?
Well, and you know, I guess both of you, and I really thought about this, but it probably is, oh yeah, you're working for your dad. And no, you know, nothing's further than the truth than thinking that I've done a lot for you guys. It's really the opposite. You've done a lot for the company and getting us to levels we wouldn't be at. And then also for our industry, because they're getting to see a document in a way that no one else produces. I mean, that's what's nice.
Yeah, nobody really does. Even academia, if they get a hold of the...
Yeah, they're impressed.
Did I tell you I used the California Crash to get into my MBA program?
No.
That was the document I presented.
Wow.
And I'm like, oh, well, that's right.
I remember in just the last few seconds, the first guy that opened it in the seminar went, oh my goodness.
Yeah, that was a fun document to present. Well, it's been great to be on this side of the table for once and not producing. So thanks for that. And
thanks, Aaron. Have fun.
All right.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.